Hello, everyone, and welcome to Thrifters Villa, a podcast for resellers and entrepreneurs. I'm Daniela.
And I'm Lori, and today we have a Thrifters Villa Q&A for you.
Thank you to everyone who submitted questions to us over the last week. We can't wait to answer them for you.
All right, let's dive right into it. We'll see you at the table.
These are always fun.
We need some theme music between saying meet us at the table and by the time we get to the table.
Yeah, we need like specific Thrifters Villa music. Because I use the Anchor one, but like I think we need like custom music.
Well, now that's that we, now Bailey's,
no one knows what we're talking about. Bailey Sarian, look her up on YouTube.
She's so much fun.
She's a lot of fun.
But that's her theme song. It's that quick. And she sings it.
Yes. Can't top that. Something like that too.
Yeah, we can't top that. It's so good. We'll work on it. All right. So we have some questions. Thank you to everybody who wrote in to us.
Yes. We like answering these questions. These are fun. I think people ask us questions all the time on Instagram and then, you know, we should share those answers. We should share all that at some point in time. So we like to do these episodes where people send us questions in and we just get to share with our entire audience. So
it's good to reflect on some of this stuff and, you know, think about how some of the strategies we have in place now versus what we used to do or what we're still doing or whatever. And I will say that these are all going to be off the cuff for me.
I haven't really thought about them. So I wrote them down, but that's about as far as I went. Yes.
So that's good.
The fun of it. That's really the what we like to do, just off the cuff all the time. So the first one is, do you think Poshmark will take sharing away? So let's just start off with the controversial topic that everyone always talks about. There's like a lot of talk about bots and everything in the community right now and automation. And I personally do not think Poshmark will ever take sharing away unless their investors make them take it away. But I don't think they'll ever do it.
It's part of their platform. It's part of their model. Yeah, it is part of their model, which is interesting. I don't know how I feel about it. I feel like because so many of us are using automation, that I feel like they are going to see an increase in their sales just based off like things that I'm reading in the community, like everybody saying, oh, I started using Posher VA and now my sales are this, or I am really, just because it's been such a buzz right now, and so many people are like hopping on board with it. I don't know. Like, I wonder if their sales increase, if Poshmark would ever just create their own automation.
No.
I don't know. I don't know. It's a way for them to make more money. Like, you know,
it is.
You have this, if you want automation included, you could do it for this amount or whatever.
I would pay for it in a heartbeat.
We're already paying for it. You know what I mean?
Yes, we are.
I don't know. It's a very good question. And it looks like they've toyed with it a little bit, right? Because they had what was the search? It wasn't by Justin. It was
by relevance. So it means, and they have the new tag thing that's out there, right? So when you're creating a listing, you can put style tags in. So it feels like they're heading in a direction where it's more search based and not so much sharing based, which would be great. And maybe that's going to be, maybe sharing will still be a thing, but they'll implement more of a search based platform so that if you don't want to share or you can't share, or you don't want to use automation for sharing, which I know is quote unquote against terms for Poshmark. We're not going to get, that's a topic for a different day. Maybe there'll be like I don't know. Maybe it's, if you don't want to share, you don't feel like it should be a part of your business. Now, if you're optimized 100%, the best way that you can be, if people are searching for those specific things and using different style tags, you're still going to pop up.
That would be the question. Would you still pop up? Would Poshmark still be favoring people who are sharing, or would the SEO kind of take over?
You would assume the SEO would take over, but then even with relevance, what if someone isn't typing in exactly what's in your title? Is it going to act like Google and it's still going to pull your listing up given the categories and the brand name? Or is it going to go based off of solely what is in the search bar? Like, how advanced are they going to take it? You know,
I know. I mean, when you think about the sharing, it seems so crazy. Like, just from a from a professional standpoint and from an SEO standpoint, you're like, what a waste of time. But then right. I get why they do it as far as like making it an even playing field. Mm-hmm. But in a sense, it's not
even playing field anymore.
Well, it's not, even if you remove the bots though, if you remove all the automation, even like for somebody like me who has several items in my closet, it's not really a level playing field, in my opinion, for someone like me who has over 1,000 items, for me to have to share everything. And even if I share 1,000 items in a day, I'm still not making it through my closet. And right. if somebody else has 20 items, they can share 100 times and now they've shared their closet 5 times. That right. doesn't feel like a level playing field to me. Like, yes, we all have the capability of pressing share, which I did on my own for a very long time. And then my dad did it for me for a very long time. And it just got to be so ridiculous. You know what I mean? So, but I don't see that as, yes, we all have the capability of pressing the share button, but I feel like there should be a little bit of a reward for their sellers who are, you know, really bringing in a lot for them.
Producing for them, right? At the end of the day, I even where I work, we use automation all the time. All the time. Email templates. I mean, these simple things that you don't think about is automation. If there's a shortcut on your keyboard that you're using when you're creating a listing, I mean, that's all a form of automation. It doesn't matter how you, it doesn't have to be a bot. Bot is like one form of automation. But real time businesses, and I'm sure Poshmark uses some form of automation with emails, which they do. If someone opens a case, there's an automated email that goes out. So they're using a form of automation.
Right. They're not doing them manually.
No.
I wish they would. Maybe they would respond to me sooner.
Maybe they would. Maybe cases wouldn't last for a week before there's a response. Maybe that we'd actually have a 1-800 number. Who knows? I mean, no, these are all different things. But if they don't even have a customer service line yet for all their sellers, sharing isn't going anywhere. Like, you know,
they're pretty archaic.
Yeah, there's basics that they need that they're very behind on. And now, you know, it's very interesting because the whole reselling market and platforms are changing. Last week, we just heard that Etsy is buying Depop. So like, here's another competitor coming in, purchasing a platform that can thrive, given how vintage and Y2K is so big right now.
Yeah.
And that's where the majority of that is being sold. You know, it's going to change the way Depop runs, and it's probably going to run a lot better. And there's going to be different things on there that Etsy has that they're probably going to give to Depop's platform. And then it's going to be another competitor for Poshmark, because right now Depop's not really a competitor.
I think they're going to become a player now, you know. I shared that on my story when I saw that article. Actually, one of my followers shared it with me, and then I went to the article and then shared it. But yeah, I think that's a really interesting matchup, and mm-hmm. there's going to be some power behind that. I'm curious to see where it goes.
I think you're going to see Depop and eBay kind of take over that vintage Y2K. Like, I think a lot of those sellers are going to, like, that's going to be the play. Maybe Depop will have lower percentages that they take out. I don't know. Like, I don't know how it's all going to work, obviously, but maybe their commission rate is lower. I don't know, but you're going to see a lot of people, possibly, this is just my prediction, probably pull off of Poshmark and go to Depop if they actually become this more developed application to use.
Yeah, where they can do vintage hard goods and clothing together. That's kind of a little bit more of a niche platform. I mean, I sell plenty of vintage on Poshmark. I do. Mm-hmm. But it's not my specialty. So if I was doing it day in and day out, I might get more frustrated with the time in which it takes to sell. But yeah, like I'm thinking of my friend Brittany from Shop Foxborough, who sells. She has a pretty active Etsy account.
Yeah.
And I can see so many of her items doing really well. Plus she does modeling, which does well on Depop. So I can see that being like a good match.
Right. And even
for someone like Brittany, I'm just speculating here, Brittany, if you're listening, I'm not trying to put words into your mouth.
It's all just speculation. this is what we're thinking. But I think there's going to be a way that I think Etsy and Depop will merge in some fashion. I don't know, none of us knows what that will look like.
Right.
It will be interesting because Etsy really took off last year. And yes, mask making definitely helped, but now it's evolved and they have a lot of commercials. If you watch HGTV, every other commercial is an Etsy commercial about getting unique pieces into your home, whether it's pillows, handmade wooden objects. Like, It's everywhere. So,
and yeah. I will say, no matter what you read, whatever you're reading, one thing that is super consistent is projections that the secondhand market is going to just continue to grow and grow and skyrocket. And there are going to be, in my opinion, more players who come mm-hmm. to the table. You know, the landscape is going to change a bit over the next 10 years, whether it's high-end retailers who we're already seeing mm-hmm. having secondary, you know, secondhand things in their store. You know, we interviewed Sarah from Fashion File and they're in Neiman Marcus. And so, you know, ThredUp is in stores. It's just like the model is here to stay. It's just going to be like what direction people go in with it.
Yeah.
And companies like Flip are now on the scene right. and there's all these like different things that have popped up. Yes. I think there are some key players like eBay and Poshmark that, you know, have stood this test of time. I mean, I don't know if Poshmark can even be considered that yet. I mean, they've been around.
It's been around, but they just became public. And, you know, analysts always talk to them. Like if you watch MSNBC and all these different things, they interview Manish all the time. And the numbers haven't looked good this year. Mm. Quarter one and quarter two.
I wish I sold my stock on day one. Yes, I do.
It's not doing too good right now. I mean, I still have it too, because I hold a lot when it comes to investments. I'm definitely someone that holds.
I'm not sure if we're ever going to see what happened on day one with Poshmark though.
Yeah. But I mean, and that's fine. That's just part of the investing game. Yeah. But have I made money? Yeah. But it's not like, you know, it's day one.
On Poshmark? Not much.
No, not much. Has money been made? Yeah. But it's minimal.
Yeah. Compared to what we could have made on day one.
Right. Yeah. But
that's the nature of the stock market.
It is. And I think that Poshmark is just in a really weird place where I don't think they can really take away what they're doing right now, because especially with shares, because if we do talk about investments and in the investors, they're looking at their numbers and saying, hey, you're really not creating that much revenue right now, but we see that there's a lot of activity on your platform. Well, the activity is because of all the sharing that's happening. So it's helping with their investors. I mean, there's a lot that plays into it, but the sharing definitely helps on their end to kind of say, listen, we have all these people on our application that are active every day. Yes. Okay. Our sales have not been what we projected, but you know, economy's opening back up. Like they can always back it up, right? The economy's opening back up. People are starting to shop again, like, you know, all those different
things. And I am 100% conditioned now by Poshmark. Right. I mean, I know there are people who turn off all notifications, but I am still notified when somebody likes, not shares. I don't get notified when people share my stuff, but I'm notified when somebody likes something. I'm notified when somebody creates a bundle, when somebody leaves a comment. So I am constantly like interacting. In fact, when I'm driving with Jay in the car and I have Waze on and the notifications pop up, he's like, I would have thrown that phone out the window like 10 minutes ago. Like, how do you deal with these? And I'm immune to them now because I've been conditioned. Like it's part of my, it does prompt me. I do go in and I'll, you know, leave a comment back for somebody or, you know, whatever it is. But yeah, so it is a big part of their app. So great question.
Yeah, really great. Don't really have an answer for you.
Yeah, right. We don't have an answer, but
I don't think it's going away anytime soon. And if it did, it would be a while from now. I don't think they can take it away right now.
I would agree with that. I would agree. But I mean, I am also very curious to see their spike in activity, sales, whatever it is with this
for quarter boom, three, 100%.
With this, yes, with this bot boom, I'll call it.
Which, funny enough, they see what happens in the community. They all follow us. They all know, like they watch the hashtags. They've seen the stories. They haven't done anything about it. So
it's not new. It's
no, it's been happening.
You know what I mean? Like
forever. If you're a big seller, if you were or are a big seller on the platform, you more than likely have been using automation for quite some time now. Mm-hmm. Just no one's talked about it.
Right.
All right, let's move on. Sourcing stories. Do you ever go thrifting and come out with nothing? I'm in a rut. Yeah.
Yeah.
Often. Like, probably if I don't know. Recently, I've had really good luck because it's just a thrift store had really great donations. And so I haven't walked away empty handed, but there are plenty of times I walk out with nothing. I do my laps and out the door I go.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like recently I've been doing my Thrift Across New England series. So I've been wanting to support some of these smaller mom and pop shops that I've been in, but it's been a force at a couple places. Like they've all been lovely people. But yeah, that's been a force. But no, I mean, it happens. I think it depends on how often you're thrifting. Mm-hmm. How much you're comfortable with purchasing. Mm-hmm. If you're somebody who's super selective, mm-hmm. If you're a quantity seller versus quality, I guess, for lack of a, not quality, but just, you know, somebody might be very curated. So that's a tough one, but I mean, certainly I've gone in and come out with nothing. I probably come out with nothing less than you come out with nothing.
Yeah, probably.
I'm a little bit more free flowing.
Yeah. And I don't necessarily need, like, I don't necessarily want to have a lot of inventory. Right now I have a lot of inventory just because the last couple of weeks have been really good at the thrift store. But I think that plays a part in it too, is if the donations aren't that great and it doesn't fit your business model for you, then you're probably going to walk away. There's plenty of stuff in the thrift store. Like there's tons and tons of stuff, but it just doesn't fit your business model, which is very possible. Right. And so yeah, you can walk away with nothing. There are times I walk into Savers after work, which is like the worst time to go usually, and yeah, I you know, do a couple laps, might find something for myself, but thrift, you know, resale wise, not really. Do I get discouraged if it happens multiple days in a row? Yeah, I just think that's normal for anyone. If you walk into any store 2 or 3 days in a row, it doesn't be the same store, but you go into different thrift stores and you're not really finding a lot, or, you know, maybe you're finding one or two pieces and it just seems kind of dry for the things that you need for your business. Puts you in a rut. You're absolutely right. And it makes you not motivated because you're like, oh, I can't find anything. And all these people are finding all these amazing things.
And it's time consuming. It's time consuming to do those laps. And even if you find three things, if that's your one time, if you're working full time and that's like your one day to thrift, you can put a lot of pressure on yourself to find good items in that one day out. Or if you're, you know, even if you're not working full time, but if you're a mom of little ones and it's very hard for you to get out, or you have little ones with you and you're trying to thrift in this short window, you know, everybody's circumstances are different. I also feel like thrift stores, as you mentioned, Daniela, just talking about how like your thrift stores have been good. I feel like it's like being at the casino and things can be hot and you don't want to get up from the table because, you know,
it's so good.
And then you want to keep going back and, you know, you sense like there's kind of a cycle filtering through your thrift store. So you keep going back, and other times you can go a couple times and you're like, do I even want to keep this store in my rotation? Like, it feels like that much of a waste of my time. And there have been a few lately that I'm starting to question. You know, my local Savers has been just, you know, post-pandemic, since the prices have gone up, if I'm not in there with a coupon, it's almost comical, some of the prices. And then like this week I found the Reformation jeans and they were marked $4.79. And I had a coupon and it was at Savers right next to a pair of $16 Loft jeans. You know what I mean? So like, it's just, Savers is just, it's its own beast. We should have an episode on how to just navigate Savers.
Actually a really good idea, because I think we've learned it pretty well over the last couple of years.
Both of us shop there a lot. So
yeah, it's our main place that we go to. Especially for me or anyone that's really in Rhode Island, it's our main place to go to because there just isn't many of them. There are other options, but either they're not open when I can go, or they're overpriced for reselling terms. Great for your own personal closet, but not great for reselling. We just don't have a ton of options here.
And it's so strange to go through the rack at Savers and have one pair of jeans be $4.79 next to a pair of Luckies for $13.99, next to a pair of American Eagle for $8.99. I mean, the fact that the range is like, literally I've seen jeans as low as $3.99, mm-hmm. pants like leggings as low as like $2.99, and then all the way up to like $22.99.
Or even more, depending on the brand.
It's just like, it's, and then you go into a regular store and it's like, oh, this is like such a breath of fresh air. The jeans are $6.99. Look at that.
Yeah, it's a very biased process at Savers.
That's a great way to explain it. Very biased
because every pricer prices differently and you can see that on the rack. Like, You know, well, whoever priced the jeans today priced everything at $19.99. You know, anything that's a quote unquote designer is priced at $19.99, and no one's buying it, and it's sitting there. And then the Goodwill just opened up here in Rhode Island. Doesn't have a pricing structure either. There is no system in place. Everything is priced according to brand. So it's the exact same thing. We do Excellent. Not have like tops are $5.99, like in Boston. No, that does not exist. Everything is priced according to the brand, and they know brands at that store. So if you haven't been yet to the Goodwill in Warwick, Rhode Island, this is your warning. Everything, they know the brands, and they're pricing the brands accordingly. They missed a pair of Carbon 38 leggings, which I would assume they would miss because it's not a brand that many people would know. So I happened to find one pair, first time finding it, $4.99, which is great. But everything else, all the brands that you would think that a thrift store would know, like Acne and Lafayette 48.
I wouldn't expect them to know that.
Oh, they know. Armani, all of those brands.
Well, Armani, I would expect.
Yeah, but I'm trying to think of another one that they had that I was surprised. Acne was one I was surprised that they knew, and they priced it at $18.99, which I still picked up because I knew the value of the piece. So for me, $18.99, I'm in a place where I'm comfortable spending that amount of money on certain pieces, but it's taken me 2 years to get to this point where I'm comfortable to pay up for that. Yep. So look, if you're a newbie listening and you don't really know that stuff, you don't have to spend that. Like, that's only if you can afford it in your budget. That's, you know, we've talked about this before, having like a reselling specific account and budget and everything. What was the other brand that I was like, oh, they know this brand. I cannot think of it.
It's so interesting. And then it just becomes more of a...
Helmut Lang. Helmut Lang. They knew what it was. Interesting. And it was priced at $25.99, which was too high for me. And I wouldn't
keep it because I have a hard time moving Helmut Lang.
So I didn't get that. But they know it. So, and I asked the girl, because I knew her from Savers. So she switched, doesn't work at Savers anymore. She works at Goodwill now, right up the road. And she said they hired specific people in that store, because this is the first time Goodwill has opened up in Rhode Island in 20 years.
Wow.
They closed it in Providence a while back, and it used to be a Bins too. So from what I understand, they assume this location is going to do really well, which I think it is, given the location it's in. And they're going to open a few more, and there's a possibility of a Bins possibly opening up in Rhode Island, which would be fantastic if a Bins opened
so
up.
Exciting.
That would be great. But they hired specific people to do the pricing. So like they actually have like a team that looks up things. And then I'm going to assume they're going to pull different things to put on their website as well, as we've heard other people say about their Goodwills doing in the area. And it's just, that's their business.
This gets back to secondhand businesses being big, and it is big business. And every time we go now, like I can't remember where I was recently. I think it was at the Savers in Natick. And somebody recognized me and we chatted for a little bit. And then somebody else was like, oh, I'm a reseller too. And she was just a random woman walking by. And she said, I think everybody who comes here is a reseller. And I'm like,
yeah.
And so I'm, you know, the store owners are aware. So
very much aware. I'm the Savers that I always go to knows what I do. I've never had the conversation with them, but they know.
Yeah.
They see me go in day after day, the Salvation Army. They know, like, cause I'm there all the time, especially when it's really good and I'm grabbing stuff. So they don't say anything, but.
I mean, I think my bottom line is always like, I mean, if I count my receipts up at the end of the month, I am a good patron of these stores. So, I mean,
I'm bringing you lots of money.
We might be annoying, but at the same time, we are very consistent money for these prices. It's like having owning a nail salon and having your regulars come in where they're your regulars, you know what I mean? And we're the ones that shell out a lot of money. So yeah, that's interesting. Oh my gosh.
So yes, we can fall into a rut. Yes. We walk out with nothing all the time. And sometimes
that's not what the question was.
Yeah. So you're not alone. It happens to all of us. And don't look at social media because people only post the good things they found maybe 2 weeks ago. So don't look at that. Social media means nothing. People are only going to post the good stuff.
I said, not if it upsets you.
Yeah. Don't pay attention to it or use it as, you know, a way to learn different brands. Maybe you've seen these brands and don't realize it because you don't know them yet. And then you see it on an Instagram post and you can write it down and make a notation of what the label looks like. And then maybe you'll find it. You'd be surprised.
Okay, next question. Do you ever find someone starts a bundle on Poshmark and then nothing? What do you do? Yes, that happens all the time.
It's
All the
about.
time, all the time.
I feel like it happens. I feel like the bigger your closet is, maybe the more it happens. I don't. People do it to me sometimes, but I feel like it's not something that happens too often to me. And I don't know if it's because of the price point of items I have in my closet. Maybe because I have items that are typically $50 and above. It doesn't happen too often to me. But yeah, there have been times that it happens, and sometimes I think I used to reach out more so. Maybe like last year, but now I really don't reach out if someone creates a bundle unless I notice that it's like all the same size. So let's say they bundled like three pieces that are a size medium, then I'll write a little note. I have like a little shortcut in my phone where it's like, hey, thank you so much for checking out my closet. If you're interested in any of your liked items, let me know. I'd be happy to send you a discount, a discount on the on this bundle with discounted shipping kind of thing. But that's really it. I don't really reach out all the time.
I don't know. I try to pay attention to my bundles because I feel like I'm at a point where I get a fair amount of repeat people. And I always want to make sure that I'm talking to the people who have purchased from me once before. So sometimes I'll just look in there and glance and see if a conversation has already started. And sometimes the message is from like several months ago, like, oh, it was a bundle they started in February and I commented and then they never purchased. And then I'll see that a couple of the items have now sold that are in their bundle. So I'll kind of refresh the bundle. I'll take out what's been sold, maybe add a couple of their liked items, send them a message. But like you, I don't do it all the time, but I try to pay attention to my bundles. And this is, I probably shouldn't do this, but sometimes when there are people who like make a bundle or like a bunch of things in my closet, before I take the time to send them a message, I go to the about page and I see if they've ever purchased. Because I do believe that there are people who are perpetual likers and perpetual bundlers who are just, they're just fishing. They want to know what your bottom line is or what your discount is, but they really don't have any intention of buying. And I probably should not prejudge that at all. I don't think that's best practice, but
Just human
sometimes,
nature.
yeah, or sometimes it's somebody who's new, so they're
I was
liking
gonna
a
say,
bunch of
sometimes it's new people
stuff.
and they don't
And they
know.
don't know, like they just think they're giving me a compliment by saying I like this, like you do on Facebook, but it's a different culture on Poshmark. So it does happen a lot. I try to stay open-ended. Or I'll just if they just bundle one item, I'll just send them an offer with no contact. Like I don't really engage in a conversation, but if they bundle like three items, I might I'll ask a question or let them know that I'm sending them a 20% off discount or something like that. Feel free to make any changes, or decline my offer if you want to switch things around. Ask me any questions, no pressure. This offer will stand. Like I'm not like, oh, you have 24 hours to purchase this at 20% or whatever. Like I'm just pretty chill about it.
The main way that I use bundles is a way for me to connect with my previous customers, in a sense that I go back to my sale. So like I just did this one, I did my 50% off sale on Instagram.
Oh,
I
how did that
post, right?
go?
It went really well. I had thank you to everyone who's listening that purchased from me, like eight or nine people from Instagram who,
Awesome.
who bought. And then I also extended to my previous customers. So what I did was I went back, because you can sort your sales by date. So I did like from June, I did it in chunks so I didn't get overwhelmed. So I did all of June of last year, all of July of last year, and I went all the way to March of this, no, April of this year. And I had like a pre-scripted thing that I just put in every bundle. Thank you for being a customer of mine. I want to extend this discount to you. It's good for the next 48 hours, whatever. It's 50% off anything. And I had probably five or six people who purchased from me last year who ended up purchasing again, and a couple of them
I love
bundled.
it.
So
I love it.
yeah, that's like my sales method that I do on Poshmark, because there's no way to run a sale like on eBay. So you have to do the manual work for it. And there's multiple ways you can do it, whether it's sending out offers, 50% off offers to everyone, or extending it to your previous customers and just saying, hey, thanks so much for buying from me. This is my thank you to you. Everything is 50% off.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah,
That's
so I do that. And
great.
After talking to Sarah from Fashionphile, and this is something I wanted to do before, I haven't initiated or anything yet, but I've seen other people in the community do it now too, where they've created like little postcards that they're putting in their boxes that they're sending out of sales, saying like, mention this postcard or mention this sticker, and you'll get 20% off your next purchase, kind of
Yes.
thing. So another great way to get repeat buyers.
Yeah, that's great. Absolutely. Yep. All great tips. Great,
Oh,
great.
all right, next one. This is a loaded question. What does it take to leave my 9 to 5 to be a full-time reseller with no support, sole income? We've talked about this before too.
I don't know what it means because I don't do it. I
Yeah,
am not
I
the sole income provider
this is
here.
a tough question because everyone's situations are different. Everyone's living expenses are different. Especially here on the East Coast, like I don't know where you live, but it's very difficult here on the East Coast if you are a if it is your sole income. It's just living expenses are high here, right? They're high a lot of places. It's not just here, but they're high here. So my number one thing that I would say to someone is, if this is what you want to do full time, then you need to plan at least a year or two in advance. And figure out, talk to a financial advisor, talk to an accountant, figure out all the logistics, how much you would need to have in a savings account before you even attempted to go full time. Like, you need to have enough money in the bank for those months that we're heading into right now that tend to be a little bit slower, just given the nature of what's happening. It's summer and things are reopened.
It's a double whammy this summer.
It is. It's not just it's summer.
We're feeling it on YouTube content too. I have, you know, people are just out. They're not home watching.
Yeah, it's just
And not necessarily, yeah, they're for the first time like, oh my God, I want to go into a store. So this summer is going to be really interesting.
yeah, it is. And I think there's different things you have to plan for because there might be months where you don't make enough to cover all of your living expenses. So then what are you going to do? You need to make sure you have money saved and that you have that safety net. There are so many things when it comes to the financials that you need to think about. Whether you have children, you know, what does that look
Yeah,
like?
this is a tough question.
Medical expenses, all of that. You need to think about all that stuff because when you leave your 9 to 5, you're leaving, assuming that you have full benefits, you're leaving your benefits, you're leaving your retirement, you're leaving that consistent flow of income that you always have, that you rely on. And reselling, you don't necessarily have income that you can always consistently rely on unless you diversify your income and have other ways that you are generating money all the time that you
And
can.
even at that, though, even at that,
Still not something.
yeah.
Entrepreneurship in general, you can never assume that you're going to have money the next day. You
I
just.
think, just to interject here, I think a very simple indication, this may not be your total green light, but I've talked to a few people in the community who are full-time, who their indication that they were ready to transition was when they started making more money reselling than they were making at their full-time job.
That's a
So
good point.
if say you're working in retail right now and you're being paid by the hour, it might be a little easier to surpass that income. If you are working in a high-level corporate job, it's going to be difficult to surpass that income. So it really depends on what you're doing right now, what your 9 to 5 is too, and you know what
Good point.
your level of comfort is. So I think that was kind of a cool thing that I heard from a few people that who said, you know, I was doing this part-time, it was my side hustle, it was what I did for fun, then it became more and more and more, and then I realized 1 month I made more money reselling than I was making at my full-time job, and that's when I knew it was
Right.
time to transition. But still, even with that in mind, even if you're making more money on paper, that's not benefits, that's not paid time off, that's not childcare, like all that sort of stuff. So yeah, I think both. Yeah, I think the savings is essential. Having some sort of a plan in place. It's tough. I mean, I have close friends who do this full time, and they are the sole, you know, income for the family. And they have months where they're very stressed, very stressed.
I mean,
All it takes is like one, like something to go, you need a new roof or you need a new transmission in your car. And all of a sudden, like the nest egg that you have can be like taken really quickly.
Absolutely. And there's just two more things I want to mention about this too, is my dad owned his own business. So there were months where he didn't have a lot of work. He was a mechanic. And as years went on, when he first started, business was booming. But as the cars changed and as dealerships kind of took over a lot of the different tasks that little mechanics could do that a lot of them can't do because the equipment just costs way too much money for them to take on, or the cars just don't allow for a small mechanic to work on it anymore, and you have to go into the dealerships because they have different tools or different computer systems that speak to the car. We didn't have money coming in. So at a very young age, when I started working, I had to work additional jobs, or I had to find other ways to make money because my dad wasn't bringing in as much as he was maybe the month before. And, you know, mortgage, food, all these different things. So I learned at a very young age that, you know, what it meant to hustle. And my dad always worked a second job. And, you know, there were different things that he did to help supplement. But his main source of income had decreased. So any form of entrepreneurship, you're going to find this, not just in reselling. The other thing, too, is you need to really find out if reselling is really what you want to do full time. Because I think we all experience this if you work a full time job. And I can speak because I work a full time job and I do this. There's this element of reselling that is so freeing because you are your own boss. And you fall into this cycle where it's like, I could do this every single day. This is amazing. You know, there's a lot of really great perks to it. And you kind of forget of all the business side of things that have to be done with reselling, especially when you grow, like the accounting, the taxes, just managing your time and cross-listing, all these different things that fall in that you forget. Because we just remember the sourcing. The sourcing part is the fun part, and that's what we remember. So just keeping that in mind. Sell the things in your home first that you don't need. Sell your clothes that you don't want anymore. Like, do all that first. Build your income that way and grow from there and use the different tips that Lori said and that, you know, I had mentioned about financials and kind of go from there.
That's, I mean, even with doing this full time, I don't know. Like, I think in terms of my accounting and what a mess I would be if I didn't have Jay doing my accounting. And
yeah, it's a lot.
It's a lot to juggle, but you know what I mean? It can be done. And there are people.
Absolutely. There are very successful people out there that are doing it. And yes, it can be done, but you just have to
take your time
for you.
Take
your time. Yeah. No rush. The next one is, what is your OTL, just offer to like or strategy? Wait a bit, right away, closet clear out, bundles, not at all. So many questions.
I love it.
So I typically don't participate in closet clear out. Lori, I know you do on occasion.
Not really. So often. Once in a while. Like if the stars align, I participate in it. Like I had somebody last week who purchased something and we were kind of negotiating on the price. And she said, how about you discount it to this amount? And then, you know, basically I'll get the discounted shipping and you'll make the extra $2 because you won't give me. And I was like, oh yeah, that's right. It's closet clear out. Sure. You know,
whatever you want.
Yeah, but I don't really have a system. I don't know if it's just that I'm lazy. I don't like to mark my things down because I feel like I will forget. And then once they're marked down once, it's really hard to go back and price them up. I am much more, my model is much more based on like I price high and I send aggressive offers. Like I, you know, and I give myself enough cushion on my margins to be able to do that. So offer to likers, yes, all day. I take advantage of that a lot. I send offers to likers when I'm paying attention, usually not immediately, not within seconds, but you know, half an hour or so. If I'm on the app, I'll send them out. Or I'll just go in and search my news and see what I have for likes at the end of the day, maybe send offers at the end of the day. I'm not super systematic about it, but I do use offer to likers a lot. We talked about bundles already and I'm not big on closet clear out.
I use offer to likers every day, all the time. I wait like 15 minutes, 30 minutes in that range.
Yeah.
And that is probably my main way of making sales on Poshmark. If I didn't use offers to likers, and I've tested this, not for long periods of time, but I've tested not sending offers to likers for a full day, and my feed was like dead on Poshmark. I didn't make any sales. I think the offer feature, even if someone doesn't accept your offer that day, because they, whatever the reason is, didn't have the funds or they had to think about it, a lot of times people come back even maybe a week or two later and they'll send you an offer for the price you send, maybe a few dollars less to account for the shipping, right? So let's say you send an offer $40 with discounted shipping, they might set one for 38 or 37. Well, I'm going to accept it because it's basically the same thing at that point. So I use offers to likers as almost a way to start the conversation. And if they really want it, they'll come back.
And I mean, I even shop that way now. Like I'll look at things and I'll like them and be like, ah, I'm not like fully committed to this product, this, this item right now, but it's cute. And if they send me the right offer, I'd buy it. But if they don't send me the right offer, then I'm not going to lose any sleep over this. I mean, and that's the difference between having an item that's like super hot that people don't want to miss out on. That's when you get your full price sales versus something that's cute, but people can kind of live without. So they wait, you know, and I'm here to send those offers to those people.
Same.
I'm your girl.
Yeah, but I think Offers to Likers is a great tool to use on Poshmark, especially since we don't have a way to do a sale like eBay. So I think it's a great way. I know Mercari does offers to, it's a good tool.
eBay also has offers to watchers.
Yes, they do.
I also do, and I do make sales off of that as well, too. I'm just not as into my groove with eBay, but so I probably send those maybe like once, twice a week, where I have friends who, you know, that's the first thing they do every morning is they send their offers to watchers, and they can do it in bulk on eBay as well.
Yeah, I do it.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously and 6-1 since that matters. And what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble. With exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Daily, when I have anything, because eBay sometimes is just completely dead for me, but I definitely do like the promoted listings. I do all that kind of stuff to kind of help with sales, and I run promotions in my eBay store and all of that to just kind of help.
Yeah, just keep it, just like, even
be
though
competitive with retailers, basically.
Even though eBay doesn't have the sharing, they still like the activity.
Yes, absolutely.
All they know apps. When you're on there as well.
This next question is fun. Thrift store, bins, buy, sell, trade. What do we like? What don't we like? We like it all.
We like it all.
We like it all.
I am all of the above. All of the above. And throw a little RA in there sometimes and estate sales. I like it all.
Yeah, me too. There isn't one that I prefer over the other. Bins is unpredictable and you don't know what you're going to find. So it's like an element of surprise. Might be great, may not be great. Thrift store, same thing. You don't know, might be amazing, may not be. It's just a thrill of the hunt, really.
I mean, these are not consistent stores. I mean, you know, you may be in an area that consistently gets good or bad donations, but you know, it's always a gamble when you walk in. I will say, you know, I've been doing this for 3 years and I feel the 3 years of age at the bins. Like I feel like a grandma saying, when I used to go to the bins, I could stay for 7 hours. Now I like it. I have to be mentally up for the bins.
It's a lot.
Well, because I think what's changed for me is I used to just be very comfortable with a death pile for a decent amount of time. And now that I have my inventory under control and I have Caitlin, who is an assistant who helps me, she works 9-10 hours a week. I know when something comes through the door, like how long it's going to take to process it. So I don't necessarily want to be like at the bins grabbing, you know, 50 new items that could be damaged, that might sell, you know, like I've just gotten a little more. So I have to be up for the bins, but I still love it. Sometimes I'll go to the bins. I'm like, why don't I come here every single week?
Yeah. I think it depends on what you find, but then you can say the same thing about the thrift store. Like, why did I knock this place out of my list of places to go to? It's been so good the last few days. I will say buy, sell, trade stores. I like going to simply for the fact that it's organized and it's a little different than a thrift store. And yes, the prices are higher, but typically you can find more curated pieces if that's the kind of stuff you like to sell. So sometimes the experience in a buy sell trade, while yes, the price point may be higher, can be a better experience. And there's a lot of resellers out there that only do buy sell trade because that's how curated their closet is. I like going to a thrift store.
Yeah, same.
That's probably my favorite place to go. I like the bins too, but it is exhausting and they're not really that close to me. So it's like an all day affair.
You can't really be, and no longer can we be spontaneous with the bins either, with the
rotation. So it kind of takes that all away.
Yeah, you don't have to get in line anymore. But like I used to be able to walk in any time of the day.
Whenever. It didn't matter.
There would be rotations. And now they kick you out to do the rotations. That's not going away in New Hampshire. Okay. So there's no wait anymore. You can just walk right in. There's no more numbers being handed out, but they still have their schedule where they kick you out and then they switch the bins. And then there's no rotations while you're there, which was so much part of the fun.
That was like the whole point of it before.
Yeah. So, but the good thing about that is you can plan for it and just be like, okay, I'm just going to do this one rotation because you know the rotation. It's not like I'm in there and, you know, when you're in there, you're afraid to leave because you're like, well, what if they're coming out with a shoe bin in 5 minutes and I leave? It's like that intermittent reinforcement. You just don't know when it's coming. So you don't want to walk away from it. Yeah. Where with the other rotations, you can say, well, I'll get there at this time. I'll be there for 2 hours because that's when they kick me out. And then I will go home and I know I can be home at this time. I feel like you can plan your time a little bit better, but I think the thrift store is like right in the middle. You get those really great bargains. You might find a diamond in the rough. The experience isn't so exhausting.
Right.
But I do, in actually tonight's episode of that I just put out for Thrift Across New England, there are two stores that I go to on the Vineyard. One is a traditional thrift store and one is a consignment store. And I talk about that, how my cost of goods was like $13 at the consignment store average. And at the other store it was like six. But you'll see the difference in the things that I picked up. So I really enjoyed doing the haul with those two hauls side by side. First, this is the
thrift comparison.
Yeah, it is a good comparison. And people can judge for themselves like, oh, I would never pay that much money. Or, oh, that seems like, look at all the names you got at that store or whatever. I mean, it is what it is. Like it's not everybody's cup of tea, but it was a fun shopping experience at the consignment store. Like the owner was like suggesting things and knew her inventory and could point us in the right direction. I mean, it's a different experience when it's consignment, when it's buy sell trade, So anyway, yeah, we love it all.
We like it all. We have zero preference. Whatever place is going to give us the best inventory. That's really what it comes down to.
Exactly.
This question is fun. This is our last question, guys. And it is, what is the safest and best way to sell handbags? eBay authentication, online authentication, the RealReal fashion file. Is Poshmark a safe place to sell as well? Well, Lori has a story about buying on Poshmark when it comes to handbags. And I'm assuming that you mean luxury handbags or more like designer handbags. If you're selling just like Fossil, anything like, Calvin Klein, you can sell those on any you can sell those on eBay and Poshmark, Mercari. Like, you don't really have to worry about much. But if you're talking about specifically designer and luxury, always authenticate, no matter how you do it. If you want to send it into Fashion File, the RealReal, they're going to tell you if it's real or fake, and they're going to be very nice about it. They're not like going to report you or anything for sending something that is possibly.
In a way, it's a way to save money if you just send it to them instead of getting it authenticated. They'll authenticate it for you.
Yeah. Online authentication, I've used it. I've used Real Authentication numerous times and they've been great.
Real Authentication.
Yeah, Real Authentication. And then there's other ones out there, but I haven't used them. But Real Authentication is a wonderful tool. You have to be okay with paying up the $30. The first time, I think it's $25. They give you a discount, I think.
I think it was $20 the first time.
And then it's $30 after that. But it's peace of mind. You have to think of it as a business expense. eBay authentication is new. I believe they just released that this past week. So I don't have any experience with eBay authentication. Most of my higher end luxury, I will sell myself try to sell myself for the first few months and I end up sending it in. I just sent in, a Dior bag to Fashion File. So, I'm comfortable sending
the
in
buyout. Did you take the buyout?
I took the buyout, $375. So I more than doubled my money.
Yeah. That is awesome.
Yeah. And someone might be thinking like, well, that was, and it is a more rare Dior bag. And I probably could have waited for the $700 offer on a different platform, but you know what? Money. Money.
Again, and this comes down to people's business models. Like if somebody wants to store that for a year and wait for the $700, they can. And you, your business model is buy it and then flip it and put the money in your bank account and then move on to the next piece. So really, it's really just depends on what you like. All right, so I have a new story.
Oh, you have another story. Okay, all right.
My first story was I bought a piece, a Louis Vuitton Pochette Matisse for $1,700 on.
That Lori's been eyeing for a long time.
I've been eyeing for a long time. I bought it. It was, you know, they were selling around 2000, 2100. This was 17. It looked legit. And if it wasn't, I don't worry about things not being authentic because either, I mean, at that price point, Poshmark authenticates over $500. But even if it passed through Poshmark and it got to me and I brought it to Louis Vuitton and it was fake, I would still open a case and get my money.
Absolutely.
I mean, people get their money back for weak things on Poshmark.
I got my money back for a piece that I got that was not authentic. I did the research and it was a handbag. It was not authentic. I could tell from the second I opened the box. I screenshot every piece of it. I screenshot the actual item and what it should look like. And I mean, it took a couple of days, but I won the case. Zero questions asked.
Yeah, well, I think I have a case in the making. So,
do you tell me?
I was just stupid and impulsive, and there was it was a Chanel bag for $400. It's definitely fake. It's definitely fake. But the pictures weren't clear, and it was like somebody.
There's
some really good fakes, but I feel like the real fakes are like they're marketed really beautifully. Yeah.
The hardware is almost identical to what it should be.
But then they're charging $200 for it. And there's multiple listings of the same bag by the same seller. This is what they do. They sell knockoffs. So this was like a one-off and it was the caviar.
My favorite.
Yeah. And I paid $400 for it. There is about a 2% chance that it's real, a 98% chance that it's fake. But should I get it in the mail and it is real, it's like a $6,000 bag. There's no way.
Flap.
Yes. Ugh. I should show you the listing. You're going to look at it and be like, it's fake. And then I'm going to be really sad.
I'm surprised you didn't even send it to me.
Well, because I didn't want to hear it.
True friendship.
Because I knew like the second I bought it,
I bought a Chanel wallet for $150 and had no idea it was real until it came to me and it was. So,
yeah. So if you want to look at it, you can just look up Chanel women's purse. That's the title. Well, this is
Chanel women's purse.
Apostrophe S. $400. Look up your solds. The thing that got me was the close-up of the leather. And they're all blurry pictures. Like, it almost reminded me of somebody who had, and then the bag is probably fake as well, the dust bag, but I don't know what their dust bags look like, so.
Scrolling.
You find it? It's $400.
Black
flap. And this is the description. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
It says Chanel purse from France.
Great.
But, like I said, 98% chance it's fake, but.
But if it's real, you scored.
I will die.
There's some others on here that have sold for, this is one for 500.
You just wonder if anybody just inherited this. They had no idea what it was. I mean, they think Chanel, all right, $400.
Can you imagine?
No, I can't imagine. That's why I was like, well, what the hell? What's the worst thing that can happen? I open a case and say, this is fake, which is probably in the style tags.
I can't find a $400 one. I found a $300 one.
Really?
Send me the listing. $500 one. Not finding it, Lori. There's a lot of Chanel being sold for $350.
No, it's $400.
I know, like but that. I'm not.
What if you go by the, I probably shouldn't say who the seller is. Do you want me to just send you these
pics? Just send it to me, Lori.
Okay.
So I can look at it. But yeah, there are a lot of fakes on Poshmark now.
A ton of fakes. And actually, can I be a little biatch for a second? Yes.
Go ahead. Our podcast, you can do what you want.
What is this thing with Poshmark sending me messages saying, help keep Poshmark in tip-top shape?
Yeah, all the time.
Like, they're expecting us to go through listing.
To keep Poshmark in tip-top shape? No, I'm not doing it.
Like, and I don't get bent out of shape about a lot of the stuff that people complain about. I will say, like, sometimes people, like, you know, they don't want to run the Posh and Sips and all that stuff. I'm like, well, whatever, then don't, you know? But Poshmark isn't like harassing me to run Posh and Sips. Like, they're harassing me by sending me this notification and saying, keep this app in tip top. Yeah. So I'm going to take my extra spare time after I share my 1300 items and then click on these things to try to help you authenticate them.
And some of them are ridiculous things. Like, they're not even like Brandy Melville. Why?
Like, speaking of automation, that's just a robot telling us to go on there and do their job. Right. Oh my God. I was so pissed about it.
Yeah. I get them all the time too. I just ignore them. I don't see the point. Why do I need to do your work? You don't pay me. I am not on your payroll.
No.
You take a 20% commission from me every time I sell something.
Yeah. I should be sending you my listings.
Yeah. Go through my closet.
I find Poshmark has a ton of fakes. I've been like really looking a lot lately, and
I don't know why you just don't go on Fashion File.
Well, because Fashion File is just more money and I'm looking for a bargain. In fact, that Pochette Matisse was on eBay, not the black one that I'm looking at. It was in monogram and it was on auction, and I had put in a bid for $990, and these go for like same $1,800 to $2,000. The highest bid, it was $1,270.
You just missed it, Lori.
Well, I didn't just miss it. I stopped because it wasn't the one I didn't really want the monogram. Yeah,
that's a really good price.
But I would buy it for $1,000 and sell it for $1,800 and take my cut and put it towards the bag that I want. That's what I was kind of thinking.
Yeah.
So there are, and see, the reason that I keep coming back to places like eBay and Poshmark is because you can maybe find that Chanel that somebody doesn't know and they're pricing it low. You're not going to find that on Fashion File. Fashion File and The RealReal, this is what they do. You're going to pay. They're going to get as much money out of that bag as they possibly can. You're not going to find a bargain on those websites. You can find a bargain on Poshmark or eBay, somebody who doesn't know what they have, but then you run the risk of buying fake Chanel bags for $400.
Did you try Tradesy yet? Speaking of a good place to sell handbags, if you have luxury, Tradesy's a good place too.
I have not. I've purchased I bought a Louis Vuitton pouch. It's like a makeup bag. It almost looks like a camera bag. It's like the size of these bags I'm looking at, but it's just a pouch. And I paid only $90 for it. And it's real. The problem was the inside was sticky, like had melted the coating that's on the canvas of Louis Vuitton bags. They get like gummy if they're not stored properly after a while. So the inside was like black, sticky mess, like disgusting. Yeah. But I had been watching videos on restoring Louis Vuitton bags. And one of the things that they do often is when they get these bags, I think it was just, it was alcohol or peroxide. You take a Q-tip and you have to be very careful because you don't want to get the canvas that it's touching. And then you just go over it with a Q-tip. And I went through like 100 Q-tips because they get black what it leaves behind is just the raw suede.
Oh, nice.
It's beautiful. So, and it's the inside of the bag. It was like inside. So I restored it and it's gorgeous. But I mean, I could probably get $350 for it.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you ever get sick of it, it's a great flip on your end.
It is. And it's really cute. I sent you the images. Did you get them?
Hold on. I'll look right now. Yes. I just got it.
Wait for it, everybody. Here she goes.
Well, it has the authentication card.
Right. And what's funny about that authentication card, this is a fun fact. I did some fact checking.
I have an authentication card in that wallet, too. I should compare them.
So this number 102-18184.
Yep. Look it up.
When you put that number in, it brings up the classic flap. Like that's the number for the classic flap. Okay. also, I went to a website on how to identify fake Chanel bags. And it said something like, I don't remember the era, but there was like, during this time, the number on the card, there were 6 numbers. During this time, there were 7. And I think it was like from the 90s to the 2000s, early 2000s, there were 8 numbers. It said no Chanel bag will ever have a 9-digit code. So I'm like, oh no, is this 9 digits? But it's 8. Now, you know what picture, and I apologize to our listeners.
Guys, you can't see this, but.
But the photograph of the close-up, which yeah. I think with what I sent to you was, which picture is it? Oh no, it's the one that kind of shows the top part of the flap of the bag.
And if, right now.
I feel like that looks really good.
It does, but I'm going to tell you, when you hold it, you'll be able to tell.
Sure it's fake.
There is a Chanel bag that is not authentic that they make, that you can buy on one of those websites that exists where they have like all knockoffs, that they have mimicked this bag to perfection, and the interior looks similar to this, but the caviar leather is very different than the lambskin leather, so... It has all the right markings. I mean, the logo looks right. I don't know if that duster bag was ever in use, though.
Yeah, that duster bag is the biggest red flag in the whole thing. Is the duster?
I don't think I've ever seen a duster bag that looks like that by Chanel.
No.
See, guys, this is why authentication is so hard.
It is, but so this is also for me. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to get this, and I'm going to analyze the heck out of this bag.
It's a great video, Lori, to like. Show people what your process and what you did and how you and what the red flags were for you.
Yeah. And just, I mean, I'm sure it is a fake, but like the only question for me is, I don't know if I want to pay the
$30.
Well, if I get it and it feels good, then I will pay the $30. Obviously, because that's a drop in the bucket for this bag.
Right.
It's probably fake because I've asked them if it's real and they haven't responded to me.
That might be a good indicator. But it could be, it could be real, but it could also be one of those really good fakes that our friend Jill, I think it was last year, found a very similar bag. And it was a limited edition Chanel bag, and it looked identical to the real one. And the feel of it, it had real leather, everything about it. If she's listening, I'm sure she's like screaming because I thought it was real. She thought it was real. The hardware was correct, except for one little piece. And then she went and looked at the serial number. And it did not match what the serial number should be. But everything else was perfect. Perfect.
Oh, that's so upsetting.
That's the thing. Like, you know, these companies are getting really good at creating items that are not authentic to look and feel like they're authentic.
Yeah.
There's a big, you know, luxury, and Sarah talked about this too when she was on the episode, but there's like this, there's a huge problem with luxury being faked out there.
Oh gosh. And I mean, this is probably the most faked bag in the universe.
It is. It is the most desirable bag.
Yeah.
When it comes to Chanel. Yeah. It's okay, Lori. It's a good learning experience.
It'll be a fun learning experience. I mean, I went in with my eyes wide open. I knew it was probably a fake, but like I said, so many of the fakes are marketed like they're real. And this just looks like somebody had no idea what they were dealing with and took.
I mean, that's how my Dior looked like. And then it ended up being the second I touched it, it was real and I knew it.
So to be continued.
Yeah. We will see what Lori says next week, if it's real or not.
All right. Well, that was fun. Those questions were perfect. That was a great conversation. It's always fun to reflect on some of these things.
Yes.
That we do in this crazy job.
It's a fun job, though. Get to meet a lot of people.
Super fun.
It is. Yeah. I'm going to go and finish watching Halston on Netflix. That's what I'm
going to
do. It's about Halston, the designer. I think you would like it.
Oh, good. I will watch it. Anthony's girlfriend is here for one more night, and we are going to go watch Get Out. Have you seen that?
No. What's Get Out? The scary movie.
Yeah. We've seen it before, but my kids, I've raised all babies. None of them like horror movies.
Our movies either.
They are their dad. I always say I don't like the real gory stuff. I don't prefer it. I don't like it, but it doesn't scare me. The thrillers scare me, like the stuff, the CSI stuff, the stuff that can really happen.
Yeah.
That scares me. True crimes. Those scare
me. I love true crime. Those don't scare me. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening, and we will be back next week.
Good night, everyone. Good day. Good day.
Good day, mate. Good night. Good afternoon.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode. This is just a reminder that Thrifters Villa's Patreon is officially live. You can find us on patreon.com/thriftersvilla. It is just $5 a month where we're going to offer you bonus content, extra episodes, a free downloadable a month, and live events. So make sure to check us out there, and we will see you next week.